Harihi Om. Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryan Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Okay, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 15. The Lord accepts prasadam at the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Page 70. After returning to his home, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave orders to his wife. His wife, Shatirmata, began cooking with great pleasure. At Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, there was always a full stock of food. Whatever spinach, vegetables, fruit, and so on were required, he collected and brought back home. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya personally began to help Shatirmata cook, right? Because he's bringing all the various things like that and arranging all that as she starts the cooking. Because if you're doing a very big cooking, then you have a particular time. Because remember, he asked in the morning that he comes to lunch that afternoon. So then he goes home immediately and tells her to start cooking, and then anything else to be arranged, he does. And having arranged that, now he starts to help. Right? Because you get things going. Because certain things take extra time.
And now they have 3 hours to cook.
Yes. So you have to cut things. You have to this. You have to the rice and dal. That they take time and all. And so you go for it. It's like that. She was very experienced, and she knew how to cook nicely. On the southern side of the kitchen were two rooms for offering food. And in one of them, the food was offered to Shaligram Narayana. Srila Prabhupada. Among the followers of the Vedic way, the Shaligram Srila, the Vigraha Narayan, is worshipped in the form of a stone ball. In India, every Brahmana still worships the Shaligram Srila in his home. The Vaishyas and Kshatriyas may also engage in this worship, but it is compulsory in the house of a Brahmana. The other room was for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lunch. See, now here, connected with the kitchen, that you have two rooms, you have the two separate things. So it is a tradition in the Orthodox family. It's just that one's for Lord Chaitanya and one's for the worshipping Shaligram Srila.
It was lost in time.
Sorry?
The purpose was lost in time.
Yes, it was. They knew there was supposed to be two kitchens.
But why?
But they couldn't understand exactly why, yeah.
It's only two sinks now.
Yeah, now it's only two sinks. The Lord's lunchroom was very secluded, and it was newly constructed by the Bhattacharya. So that means before there must have been only one. And now that Lord Chaitanya is there, he made another room just for him to come to lunch. The room was so constructed that there was only one door opening on the outside, which served as an entrance for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There was another door attached to the kitchen, and it was through this door that the food was brought. So he could come in through that door. So he doesn't have to come through the house and drink. He can just come straight in, sit down, and then they bring the prasad. So otherwise, other family things, other things going on, he doesn't have to get involved in that. First, 3 manas of cooked rice, almost 6 pounds, was poured onto a big banana leaf. 6 pounds. Yeah, it's like 2.5 kilos on a big banana leaf. Right, because they would keep the leaf whole, like that, and so it's very far out when you have whole leaves, like that. We used to serve the Janmashtami feast to the guests, the guest swamis and that, back in the, I'd say 70s, like that on full banana leaves. You have a big banana, so they can put so many things. It's really, really a nice arrangement.
One person for one banana.
Yeah, one person, one banana. No. Yeah, you put the banana, you put 3 there, and they can share. And hey, No, one person, one banana. It's not as efficient for sitting space. You have one space and one. So on this here, you can only put one person. Then the whole stack of rice was mixed with so much yellowish and fragrant clarified butter that it began to overflow the leaf. Right? Now, rice, by nature, holds ghee. You pour ghee on it, it stays. You know, so the amount of ghee that they're putting, you know, is enough that it starts to run off the plate. And not just, you see it a little bit, it's starting to run off the plate. Like that. There were a number of pots made of bark of banana trees and the leaves of the kea plant. So the pots is you take the when you cut the banana flower comes out from that, either at the beginning or at the end, depending on what kind you want. Then you cut the banana tree. So then if it's the first one, then the core of the banana tree that can be cooked. That's called tor. The heart of banana, like that. Yes. And so, but it can only be cooked when the banana first comes out, a banana flower first comes out, and the bananas are still in the flower. Okay. Like that. Otherwise, it gets hard. And so, when they take the things off, they sit like this. So, you know, there's one, then like that, then like this, then like that. So, you take one of those that's shaped like this, and quite thick at the bottom. You cut a little bit here and here, and you take a slice of the banana tree. And you prop that up and stick it in there as a wedge. And you put one at the other end. And so then you make a boat that you can stick things in. And that flat thing, it'll sit on the floor. It'll hold itself. And then the leaf cups and all that we know about. So that I'm sure 500 years ago they did a better job than now. Yeah. These pots were filled with various cooked vegetables and placed on all sides of the leaf. There are about 10 kinds of spinach, a soup called shukta, which is made with bitter neem leaves. Shukta with neem leaves. Yeah, because that way generally you cook, fry the leaves nicely, and then you make the shukta, and then at the end you put them on, like that. A pungent preparation made with black pepper, right? So the chachuris, then they would be, now they'll use chili. But there they would use extra black pepper, so it would have that little bit of sharpness to it, you know, the heat. A mild cake made of fried curd. So the curd, you take it and hang it so it gets thick, and then you can fry it. Like you fry paneer, so you can fry that. That's far out. And buttermilk mixed with small fried pieces of dal. That gives it flavor. You make a chaunce and you put dal in it. I think in South they do that. Yeah. There's a name for that. In South, you know, the that no. This is the, you know, the where you make the buttermilk, but they make a chaunce and throw it in.
Yeah, it's just like curry, but in the curry we add the basic. We don't add this.
Yeah, there's like that, and they put the mustard seeds, the dal, the curry leaves, like that. So here, maybe in Bengali cooking, they may leave out the curry leaves and the mustard. You know, I'm not sure what they're putting here. He's not saying exact things here.
Actually, that's very good. It's very sour.
When the yogurt goes very sour. Buttermilk goes very sour. Then yeah, because they keep in pots. And this ends that, you know, they're really sour one, and this one's the fresh one, depending on what you want to do. Then, you know. There are preparations of Dugda Tumbi, Dugda Kushmanda, Veshara, Lafra is the mixed vegetable, Mocha Ganta, that's the Mocha is the banana flour, Mocha Bhaja, they make pakura, like koftas and that, like fries out of the banana leaf, and other vegetables. There were unlimited quantities of Vrita Kushmanda Badi. Like that. It means that you're making the pumpkin like that. Then they'll grate it in that, put it with other things, spices, and make bodies out of it, or, you know, koftas, like that. Fulabadi, then you can make with the flowers like that. You can also, like pumpkin flowers, you can do things with and make stuff like that. Fruits and various roots. Other preparations included eggplant mixed with newly grown neem leaves, fried together. Yeah, when you get the thing on the nicest one is on the, if you notice on the neem trees, you know, in the season, because this would then, the new leaves are actually purple. getting those ones and using those in this preparation are really good. Or if not, then the ones that are a little bit lighter green, but if you get the old tough ones, they're a little bit, you know, they're a little too strong, then you have to use less because they're too bitter, but you'll get less of the neem flavor. With the other ones, you can get the full neem flavor, but it's not so bitter. Light body, fried potol, and fried rounds of squash and pumpkin. So they'd have rounds of them. You know, you cut them in rounds and then fry them like that. Like you fry the eggplant in rounds, so they would also fry
this
the...
all fried in ghee, right?
Yeah.
Like that.
Not in...
Dalda? You know, I always remember back in the 70s, the guys that go, and they would say it like it was something so wonderful. It says, yes, it says, you know, very nice, vegetable ghee. You know, it's like... it means Dalda.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Means. Otherwise, in the West, known as Crisco. Yeah. There was a soup made with fried urad dal and mung dal, defeating nectar. So soup, then seeing here is that they're you know, they have a nice gravy. That's the meaning. Like shukta, it's not a soup like it just means it has a great, like in the West, soup, like let's say if you have a pea soup or something, they're thick.
Yeah.
So it just means that you have those nice gravies like that.
It's not hinting sambar.
Sorry?
It's not hinting the sambar.
No, and definitely not rasam. Definitely not rasam.
Yeah. No rasam.
No rasam. Yeah, because you take the mung dal or the ur dal, you soak it, and that you make dokas out of it,
yeah.
Unless that's coming up. You take it and then you cook it, and then like that, then you put it in the pan. Then when it dries, you cut it, and then you fry it. Getting becoming enthusiastic hearing the prasad. You know. There were also sweet chutney and five or six kinds of sour preparations, beginning with baramla, like that. So sour. So the sour means the chutneys. You have the thick chutneys. Then you have what's called tok in Bengali, where it's has something like that, amla, or these other kind of things that you can make chutneys out of. But they're actually quite thin. You, they're like more for drinking. You can put them on the rice, but they're very nice, very nice flavor and all that. They're not too thin, but they're not too thick, like that. You know. Okay. There were badas made of mung dal, of ur dal, and of sweet bananas. So that means that different kinds of like bodhis or the kofta thingies. And there were sweet rice cakes, coconut cakes, and various other cakes. And so whenever he's taking this rice flour and that, and then how you're making it various ways, and it, some is stuffed or this or that, like that, they're all called cakes. There were kanji bada. That means that would be the it's like a... like you have dahi wada.
Mm-hmm.
So then, kanji wada then is the same as the dahi wada. It's cooked, but it's not put in the yogurt. It's put in like a spicy liquid, like that, without yogurt. It'd be like if you had all the spices, but instead you put that, it was like a water, and you put it in there, so it gets a different kind of flavor. Dugda chira. Dugda lak. Lak laki, and various cakes that I am unable to describe. Yeah.
They had any helpers?
Huh? To eat it? No, Lord Chaitanya ate it all himself. He was good.
Any helpers to cut up?
The helpers are there. You don't have to mention them. It means the house assistants and that. It means she runs the kitchen. She has assistants.
Yeah.
Like that. So they're going to be cutting vegetables, grinding things, and doing all those kind of jazz.
The paste and the spicing.
Yeah, they'll be doing all that. And she'll be cooking. Because one preparation, except for the big dalnas, it's 10, 15, 20 minutes maximum it takes to cook one preparation. If you have many fires, you can be cooking many at once.
Yeah.
like that. So it doesn't, it hasn't said how many fires she had, but like in Jashoda Mai's house, they had 100. But then there wasn't one person cooking. There would be many like that. But easily you'd have the stoves around you. You can cook so many like that. And so other people are doing other things. Things are being boiled, smushed, bring it like this, make it, fry it, do all things like that. So, yeah, she'd have assistance. And her husband was their assistant.
He says that she was experienced.
She was experienced. Yeah, sure, she knew exactly what to do. But when they're experienced, they can be thinking of all these things at once. So they're cooking this, that's being boiled, okay, that, this, that, with that spice, this, you know, it's far out watching.
I mean, a good cook in East Country definitely do 6-7 turns at a time.
Yeah, I've watched, you know, this big 6-burner proper stove, somebody cooking on 6 at once. Like that. Yeah, that's good. Sweet rice mixed with ghee was poured into an earthen pot and mixed with champakala. Champakala is a small kind of banana. It's very sweet. Very sweet. In South, I think you have the one called like sakrakela. No? Yeah, it's like sweet. So everyone, there's this small bananas that are very sweet. Very sweet, but they're not astringent. You get also ones that are small that are astringent. I think they're called katali here. There's something like that.
The one with all the 200 seeds inside?
No, that's called biji kola.
Who wants to create something like this?
No, but those... the thing about biji kola is two aspects. You have a bad stomach, you eat one biji kola, you're good. You're fixed.
Really?
Yeah. Two is the mocha... or the banana flower off the biji kola, because the biji kola trees are the biggest of all the banana trees. They're monsters. And so the mocha off of that, when it first comes out, it comes up, and as soon as it goes like this, the thing's this big. It's that big around. You know, so two or three of those you feed. We used to, you know, feed the boys, you know, so that there were at that time, it'd be 140 people. You know?
You can't use those bananas for a food salad.
No, because you've already used them in the mocha, and you get the tor. So we never let them go. Occasionally, now one or two, and the kids love them. If you grew up eating them, they love to eat them. You know, they're crunchy. You know, like, you know, it's like popcorn or something. You know, they're into it. Those things that you eat when you're a little kid, like that, you love eating. Like cool.
Oh.
Yeah, if you're small and you eat those, you love them. If you're big and you taste it, what's this? You know, but they love them. But yeah, you know, yeah. But the main thing is it's the best banana for mocha, for the garba mocha. Other ones then because you want the bananas, then you get the after the bananas have come out, just the regular mocha. And those will all be like this big, like that. And then you have to take the flowers out, pull out the people just take out the flowers and cut them up. But though inside this little hard stem, you have to take that out. So it's very, you know, you just take it. The other one, you just, I'll peel it and just cut it up. It's really, really easy. And there's a lot of bulk because you have all the bananas inside. And so the green bananas, you know, like that are in there, then they're very nice in there. It's very nice. Okay, it was put... Okay, sweet rice mixed with ghee was poured into an earthen pot mixed with champakala, condensed milk, and mango. Okay, that's serious. So this was sweet rice, not chira.
Yeah.
Other preparations, and also when it says ghee, it means the sweet ghee. It doesn't mean the sour ghee. When you make ghee from cream, you get sweet. When you make it from yogurt, like that, or soured cream... Then you get, because so the soured one is very nice for cooking sabjis. The sweet's the one you use, the sweet one.
Like, nowadays nobody makes from yogurt. It's either sour cream or the normal cream.
Yeah.
Just cook it and then like that.
Yeah, but you have to be careful. Don't put the sour one in the sweets.
Yeah, yeah. No.
But if you grew up that way, then people like it. I've seen, like, in Gujarat, some of them use that sour cream. They put that in the mango ras. And they put that and put some jeera powder and stuff, and they like it.
Maharashtra,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I would tend to use the sweet ghee, but they don't, so they're good. Other preparations included a very delicious churned curd and a variety of sandesh sweetmeats. Indeed, all the various vegetable eatables available in Bengal and Orissa were prepared. It means whatever you could make with what's in season at that time, it was made. Like as it says, it was 10 kinds of shock. That means every kind of shock and every way to cook shock. Like that. Because you have shock where you do many things with it, and then you have the one where it's just the leaves themselves. It's, you know, cooked. So it'll just be that one leaf. You know, like in season you might have the pumpkin leaf ones, or the squash leaf ones, or kulmi shag. You get off of it, grows in the water during the rainy season. You probably have helincha growing around that time because of the water. So like that or the chola dal or other things like that, they just cook it. It has more of a grassy kind of flavor. You know, it's fully cooked. Bengalis really cook spinach. They don't just, you know, wilt it and then hurry ball. You know, they cook it down till it completely dries out, no water and like that. Thus, the Bhattacharya prepared a great variety of food and spread a fine white cloth. Spread a fine cloth over a white wooden platform. On two sides of the stack of food were pitchers filled with scented cold water. The flowers of the tulsi tree were placed atop the mound of rice. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also included several types of food that had been offered to Lord Jagannath. It's after 4. Those guys are supposed to go home at 2 or 3.
But maybe the new one.
Unless they're doing a, you know, a longer shift or something. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also included several types of food that have been offered to Lord Jagannath. These included sweet balls known as Amrita Gutika, sweet rice, and cakes. All these were kept separate. So he had everything that would be in the Bengali and the Arisan kind of cooking, like that, the uniquenesses of that. Then you'd also have the Jagannath Prasad. When everything was ready, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came there alone after finishing his midday duties. He knew the heart of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. After Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya washed the Lord's feet, the Lord entered the room to take his lunch. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a little astonished to see the gorgeous arrangement. And gesturing, he spoke to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, "This is most uncommon. How is this arrangement of rice and vegetables finished within 6 hours? Even 100 men cooking on 100 stoves could not possibly finish all these preparations within so short a time. I hope the food has already been offered to Krishna, since I see that there are tulsi flowers on it. You are most fortunate and your endeavor is successful, for you have offered such wonderful food to Radha and Krishna. The color of the rice is so attractive and its aroma so good that it appears Radha and Krishna have directly taken it. My dear Bhattacharya, your fortune is very great. How much shall I praise you? I am also very fortunate to be able to take the remnants of this food. Take away Krishna's sitting place and put it aside. Then give me prasadam on a different plate." He was taking it that this was the arrangement that you offer for Krishna, like that. You know, he didn't know, no, that's his room. Right? You know. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "It is not so wonderful, my lord. Everything is made possible by the energy and mercy of him who will eat the food. My wife and I did not especially exert ourselves in the cooking. He by whose power the food had been prepared knows everything. Now please sit in this place and take your lunch." Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied, "This place is worshipable because it was used for Krishna." Srila Prabhupada, "According to etiquette, things used by Krishna should not be used by anyone else. Similarly, things used by the spiritual master should also not be used by anyone else. That is etiquette. Whatever is used by Krishna, the spiritual master, is worshipable. In particular, Their sitting or eating places should not be used by anyone else. A devotee must be very careful to observe this. 215, 235, 237. The Bhattacharya said, both the food and the city place are the Lord's mercy. If you can eat the remnants of the food, what is the offense in your sitting in this place? Mm-hmm. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, yes, you have spoken correctly. The Shastras enjoin that the devotee can partake of everything left by Krishna. Mm-hmm. My dear Lord, the garlands, this is a quote, my dear Lord, the garlands, scented substances, garments, ornaments, and other such things that have been offered to you may later be used by your servants. By partaking of these things and eating the remnants of food you have left, we will be able to conquer the illusory energy. Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.6.46. In the Hare Krishna movement, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the dancing and ecstasy and the eating of remnants of food offered to the Lord are very, very important. One may be illiterate or incapable of understanding the philosophy, but if he partakes of these three items, he will certainly be liberated without delay. This verse was spoken by Uddhava to Lord Krishna. This was during the same time when the Uddhava Gita was spoken. At that time, there was some disturbance in Dwarka, and Lord Krishna decided to leave the material world and enter the spiritual world. Uddhava could understand the situation, and he talked with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The verse quoted above is an excerpt from their conversation. Sri Krishna's pastimes in this material world are called Prakat Lila, manifested pastimes, and his pastimes in the spiritual world are called Aprakat Lila, unmanifest pastimes. By quote-unquote unmanifest, we mean that they are not present before our eyes. It doesn't mean unmanifest means there's nothing there. It is not that the Lord's pastimes are non-existent. They're going on exactly as the sun is shining perpetually. But when the sun is present before our eyes, we call it daytime, manifest. And when it is not present, we call it night, unmanifest. Those who are above the jurisdiction of night are always in the spiritual world, where the Lord's pastimes are constantly manifest to them. As the Brahma Samhita 5.37.38 confirms, Ananda Chinmayara Sap Pratibhavi Tabhis Tabirya Eva Nijarupa Dayakalavi Goloka Eva Nivasatya Kilatmaputo Govindamari Purusham Tamahang Bajami Premanjanat Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santas Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti Yamshama Sundaram Achintya Gunasvarupam Govindamari Purusham Tamahang Bajami. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who resides in his own realm, Goloka, with Radha, who resembles his own spiritual figure, and who embodies the ecstatic potency, Ladini. Their companions are her confidants, who embody extensions of her bodily form, and who are imbued and permeated with ever-blissful spiritual rasa. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is Shyamasundar, Krishna himself, with inconceivable, innumerable attributes, whom the pure devotees see in their heart of hearts with the eye of devotion, tinged with the salve of love. 215, 238, 241. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then said, there's so much food here that it's impossible to eat it all. The Bhattacharya replied, I know how much you can eat. After all, at Jagannath Puri, you eat 52 times a day, and each time you eat hundreds of buckets filled with prasadam. At Dwarka, you keep 16,000 queens and 16,000 palaces. Also, there are 18 mothers and numerous friends and relatives of the Yadu dynasty. In Vrindavan, you have your father's elder brothers, your father's younger brothers, maternal uncles, husbands of your father's sisters, and many cowherd men. Husbands of your father's sisters, yeah. There are also cowherd boyfriends, and you eat twice a day, morning and evening, in the house of each and every one. Srila Prabhupada. In Dwarka, Lord Krishna had 18 mothers, Devaki, Rohini, and others. Besides these was his foster mother, right? Because Vasudeva had 18 wives. Right? Besides these was his foster mother, Jashoda in Vrindavan. Lord Krishna also had many uncles. As stated by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Brihat Sri Sri Radha Krishna Ganudash Deepika. 32. Upanando Bhinandascha Pritna Pitri Vyao Purava Jao Pituhu. The elder brothers of Nanda Maharaj were Upananda and Abhinandana. Similarly, in the same verse, the names of the younger brothers of Nanda Maharaj are given. Pitrivyautu kaniyamshau satatam sanandana nandanao. Sanandana and Nandana, also known as Sunanda and Pandava, were the younger brothers of Krishna's father, Nanda Maharaj. Sri Krishna's maternal uncles are also described in this book, in verse 46. Yashodhara Yashodeva Sudeva Jastu Matula. Yashodhara, Yashodeva, and Sudeva were the maternal uncles of Krishna. So Yashodhara, Yashodeva, Sudeva, and then Yashoda Devi, Yashoda Devi, all with Jasho. Yeah? Also mentioned in the Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika, 38, are Krishna's uncles who were the husbands of Nanda Maharaj's sisters. Mahani La, Suni Lascha, Ramanav, Etayo Kramat. Mahanila, Sunila are the husbands of Krishna's aunts. 2:15, 2:42, 2:43. Indeed, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued. At the Govardhan Puja ceremony, you ate stacks of rice. In comparison to that, this small quantity is not even a morsel for you. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas I am a most insignificant living being. Therefore, please accept a little quantity of food from my house. You have to show all the different things, and then Govardhan, and that, yeah, this is Srila Prabhupada. Yes. A sannyasi is expected to collect a little food from each and every householder. That is to say, he should take whatever he requires to eat. This system is called madhukari. The word madhukari comes from the word madhukara, which means honey-collecting bees. Bees collect a little honey from each flower, but all these small quantities of honey accumulate to become a beehive. Sannyasi should collect a little from each and every householder and should eat simply what is necessary to maintain the body. Being a sannyasi, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu could collect a little food from the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and this was the Bhattacharya's request. Compared to the food eaten by the Lord on other occasions, the Bhattacharya's feast was not even a morsel. This is what the Bhattacharya is pointing out to the Lord. Right? So as Madhukar, you come and take a little bit at different places, so you're eating so much there, so you can also take a little bit from my place. You know, and the amount that he's put there is a little bit compared to whatever else is there. So this is that little bit. 2:15, 2:44, 2:61. Hearing this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu smiled and sat down to eat. The Bhattacharya, with great pleasure, first offered him the prasadam from the Jagannath temple. At this time, the Bhattacharya had a son-in-law named Amogha, who was the husband of his daughter, Shati. Although born in an aristocratic Brahmin family, Amogha was a great fault finder and blasphemer. Amogha wanted to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu eat, but he was not allowed to enter. Indeed, the Bhattacharya guarded the threshold of his house with a stick in his hand. However, as soon as the Bhattacharya began distributing prasadam and was a little inattentive, Amogha came in. Seeing the quantity of food, he began to blaspheme. This much food is sufficient to satisfy 10 or 12 men, but this sannyasi alone is eating so much. As soon as Amogha said this, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya turned his eyes upon him. Seeing the Bhattacharya's attitude, Amogha immediately left. The Bhattacharya ran after him to strike him with a stick, but Amogha fled so fast that the Bhattacharya could not catch him. The Bhattacharya then began to curse his son-in-law and call him ill names. When the Bhattacharya returned, he saw that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was laughing to hear him criticize Amogha. Then Sati's mother, the Bhattacharya's wife, heard of heard of this incident, she immediately began to strike her head and chest, saying again and again, "Let Shati become a widow." Seeing the lamentation of both husband and wife, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tried to pacify them. According to their desire, he ate the prasadam and was very satisfied. Right? So that he ate everything, because that would make them happy. Right? After Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu finished eating, the Bhattacharya poured water for the Lord to wash his mouth, hands, and legs. and offered him flavored spices, tulsi manjaris, cloves, and cardamom. The Bhattacharya then placed a flower garland over Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and smeared his body with sandalwood pulp. After offering obeisances, the Bhattacharya submitted the following humble statement. I brought you to my home just to have you blaspheme. This is a great offense. Please excuse me. I beg your pardon. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, What Amoga has said is correct. Therefore, it is not blasphemy. What is your offense? After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left and returned to his residence. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya followed him. Falling down at the Lord's feet, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said many things in self-reproach. The Lord then pacified him and sent him back to his home. After returning to his home, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya consulted with his wife, the mother of Shati. After personally condemning himself, he began to speak as follows. If the man who blasphemes Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is killed, his sinful action may be atoned. Srila Prabhupada. The Hari Bhakti Vilas cites the following quotation from the Skanda Purana, considering the blaspheming of a Vaishnava. Yohi bhagavatam lokam upahasam nripotama karoti tasya nasyanti artha dharma yasha sutta nindam kurvanti ye mudha vaishnavanam maha mahatmanam patanti pritribhi sardham maha raurava samkite hanti nindati vai dveshti Vaishnavan nabhinandati. Kuru yate yati no harsham darshane patanani sakshat. In a conversation between Markandeya and Bhagirat, it is said, My dear king, one who derides an exalted devotee loses the results of his pious activities, his opulence, his reputation, and his sons. Vaishnavas are all great souls. Whoever blasphemes them falls down to the hell known as Maharaurava, accompanied by his forefathers. Whoever kills or blasphemes a Vaishnava, and whoever is envious of a Vaishnava or angry with him, or whoever does not offer him obeisances or feel joy upon seeing him, certainly falls into a hellish condition. Also in the Hari Bhakti Vilas 10.314 gives the following quotation from the Dvaraka Mahatmya. Kara patraischa falyante su tivrer yama shashanahi nindam kurvanti ye papa vaishnavanam mahatmanam. In a conversation between Prahlad Maharaj and Bali Maharaj, it is said, Those sinful people who blaspheme Vaishnavas, who are all great souls, are subjected very severely to the punishment offered by Yamaraj. In his Bhakti Sandarbha 3.13, Jiva Goswami quotes the statement concerning the blaspheming of Lord Vishnu. Ye nindanti rishikesham tad bhaktam punya rupinam sata janmar jitam punyam tesham nashyati kishchitam te pashyante mahaghore kumbipake bhayanake Bhakshita Kita Sangena Yavach Chandra Diva Karao Sri Vishnur Avamananad Guru Taram Sri Vaishnavo Langhanam Tariya Dushaka Janan Napashyet Purushad Dhaman Tai Shardam Vachaka Vanchaka Janai Saha Vasam Nakaraye. One who criticizes Lord Vishnu and his devotees loses all the benefits accrued in 100 pious births. Such a person rots in the Kumbhipaka hell and is bitten by worms as long as the sun and moon exist. And they're around for a long time. Right? One should therefore not even see the face of a person who blasphemes Lord Vishnu and his devotees. Never try to associate with such persons. In his Bhakti Sandarbha 265, Jiva Goswami further quotes from Srimad Bhagavatam's 10.74.40, Nindam Bhagavatas Shrin Vams Tat Parasya Janasyava Tato Napaiti Yasopi Yat yadha shukritach shuta. One does not immediately leave upon hearing the Lord or the Lord's devotee blasphemy. He falls down from devotional service. Similarly, Lord Shiva's wife Sati states in Srimad Bhagavatam 4.4.17, Karanau pidaya nirayad yad akalpa ishe dharma vitar yashrini bhir nribhir asyamane chinyad prasahya rushatim asyatim prabhus chej jihvam asu api tato visrijet sa dharma. One hears an irresponsible person blaspheme the master and controller of religion. He should block his ears and go away if unable to punish him. If one is not able to kill, then one should by force cut out the blasphemer's tongue and kill the offender. And after that, he should give up his own life. Yeah, so this one's spoken by Maya. So then one can't get too bent out of shape. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued, or if I give up my own life, this sinful action may be atoned. However, neither of these ideas is befitting, because both bodies belong to Brahmanas. Instead, I shall never see the face of that blasphemer. I reject him and give up my relationship with him. I shall never even speak his name. Inform my daughter Shati to abandon her relationship with her husband, because he has fallen down. When the husband falls down, it's the wife's duty to relinquish the relationship. Srila Prabhupada. Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya considered that if a moga were killed, the killer would suffer sinful reactions for killing the body of a brahmana, since he was a brahmana. Right? For the same reason, it would have been undesirable for the Bhattacharya to commit suicide, because he also was a brahmana. Since neither course could be accepted, the Bhattacharya decided to give up his relationship with the moga and never see his face. So that's what was recommended before.
Yes.
As far as killing the body of a Brahmin is concerned, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.53 gives the following injunction concerning a Brahma Bandhu, a person born of a Brahmin father, but devoid of Brahminical qualities. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Brahma Bandhur Nahantavya Atatayi Vadher Hanaha. The personality Bhadhit said, a Brahma Bandhu is not to be killed, but if he is an aggressor, he must be killed. Because anybody who's an aggressor means that they attack you, you can defend yourself. Like that. But otherwise, then they're not to be. Because even they're born in a Brahmin family, they're not behaving fully as a Brahmin. But still, in other words, the gross body has the Brahminical purity, but it doesn't. The subtle body is not up to the standard. Right? Quoting from the Smriti, Srila Sridhar Swami comments on this quotation from Srimad Bhagavatam. Atatayinam ayantam api vedanta paragam jigham santam jigam shiyan natena brahma ha bhavet. An aggressor intent on killing may be a very learned scholar of Vedanta, yet he should be killed because of his envy in killing others. In such case, it is not sinful to kill the Brahmana. Right? So, in other words, he's an aggressor, you're attacked by him, then you can fight back. Like that. Means there's no sin in killing. You know, you might consider that, like Arjuna is saying, you know, as a Vaishnava and having that soft-heartedness and that you know, the Duryodhana and others may be aggressors, but, you know, we know better. You know, than destroying the family tradition and everything like that. So it can always be considered. But the point is it's not a sin. That's the main point here. It is also stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.7.57. Vapanam dravinadhanam sthanan niryapanam tata eshahi brahmabandhunam varayo nanyosti daihikan. Cutting the hair from his head, depriving him of his wealth, and driving him from his residence are the prescribed punishments for a Brahma Bandhu. There's no injunction for killing the bodies. Right, so that's why then this is the injunction. Where was that? Did it mention where that was? Srimad Bhagavatam. So then that's why then when Krishna And Arjuna and Yudhishthira, Bhima, Draupadi, then when they had caught, what's his name? Ashwatthama. Then, you know, Krishna made the point that, how you say, Bhima and I, he mentioned himself, because every say Bhima, then he'll just, ah, no, cool. He says, Bhima and I want him killed because he's an aggressor. But then Yudhishthira and Draupadi want him not killed. So he has to satisfy both parties. So he sat, thought for a little bit, then pulled out his sword, and then cut off his hair.
Like he did with Rukmini.
Yes. But that was also just, that was just insulting him because, you know, he came and he was making so much trouble. You know. Even everybody else has turned back and didn't say he's him himself is coming and all that. And, you know, so, yeah. But, you know, I mean, Rukmini didn't appreciate it, but, you know, what can you say? I think Balaram didn't like it either. He said, you know, come on, he's a relative now. You can't harass him like this. You know, you may be brother-in-laws, but you still don't take it that far. As far as Shati, the daughter of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was concerned, she was advised to give up her relation with her husband. Concerning this, Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.18 states, Napatis cha sasyan na mochayed ya samudpeta mrityum. One cannot be a husband if he cannot liberate his dependents from inevitable death. A person is not in Krishna consciousness and is bereft of spiritual power. He cannot protect his wife from the path of repeated birth and death. Consequently, such a person cannot be accepted as a husband. A wife should dedicate her life and everything to Krishna for further advancement in Krishna consciousness. If her husband abandons Krishna consciousness and she gives up her connection with him, she follows in the footsteps of the Dvijapatnis, the wives of the Brahmins, who are engaged in performing sacrifices. The wife is not to be contemned for cutting off such a relationship. Right, so that's because sometimes they say, oh, we have to stay in that relationship. No, that kind of relationship is not necessary. In this regard, Sri Krishna assures the Dvijapatnis in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:23-31-32. Patayo nabhyasu ye ran pitri bratri sutta dayaha lokas chavo mayo peta deva apyanu manvate manvate na pi taye nuraga ya Hyango sango narinam iha tanmano mai yunjana achiran mam avapsyata. My dear Dvijapatnis, rest assured that your husbands will not neglect you on their return, nor will your brothers, sons, or fathers refuse to accept you. Because you are my pure devotees, not only your relatives but also people in general, as well as the demigods, will be satisfied with you. Transcendental love for me does not depend on bodily connection, but anyone whose mind is always absorbed in me will surely very soon come to me for my eternal association. Yeah, so you have the aspect here is that here it's unfavorable, they can't give that support and all that, so that's not necessary. It means if they're supporting and, you know, you can perform your Krishna conscious, giving all facilities so you can be Krishna conscious, and not getting in the way of them, that's fine. Like sometimes you see is, sometimes couples are not devotees and they join Krishna consciousness, the wife becomes serious, the husband's not very serious, but he gives full support that she, I saw once, I think we were in, not sure where, which if it was Beijing or someplace, went to somebody's house. Somehow they're always on the seventh floor.
Always on the top floor.
Yeah, always.
No lift.
Yeah, and no lift. So you have to walk up seven flights every time. Like that. Are they cheaper or something? Or better view? Or what's the reason? They're always on the seventh.
It's because they can have kirtan.
Okay. Now that makes sense. Okay. So, whatever it is.
But don't they have a lift?
No, anything below seven and below, there's no lift. If it's above seven floors, there's lifts, but they only build up to seven and stop. No, seven is for no lift.
That's why there's so
you get in your exercise that way.
Hmm?
Yeah. So you see something, there's a Krishna altar and there's a full Buddhist altar and there's offerings on both and everything. And so the husband is, you know, he's completely supportive, but like, so then there's no problem. But if they're not, they're like this kind of this guy, then what's the point?
Mark, huh? I'm not clear of the example with the wife of the brahmanas and the topic at hand, and what's the connection? Why was the example of the Vijayapatis mentioned?
Because it's that they means their point was they won't accept us, and so therefore you accept, we have to take shelter of you. And he's saying no, because you're my pure devotees, they'll accept. And so then they went back. So the position was there, but the husbands were such, and their mentality was changed, so that they became supportive. Because point is they left, gave up their husbands, and went to Krishna. Husbands weren't going to give anything to Krishna, and they took the offerings and went to Krishna. So there, they've already given up.
Right.
But then Krishna said that no, not that because of your surrender, then in this situation they'll all accept you. No one will give you any trouble. Like that. So the point was, is they gave up.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Okay. Transcendental love for me does not depend on bodily connection. But anyone whose mind is always absorbed in me will surely very soon come to me for my eternal association. Right? Yeah, so it doesn't have to be the bodily connection like that. It's that you're always absorbed in Krishna, that will take you to Krishna. Yeah. 215, 265. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya continued. When a husband is fallen, one's relationship with him must be given up. Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Smriti Shastra, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.11.28. Santush talo lupa daksha dharma gya priya satyavak apramatha suchi snigdha patim twapa titam bhajet. A wife who is satisfied, who is not greedy, who is expert and knows religious principles, who speaks what is dear and truth, and is not bewildered, and who is always clean and affectionate, should be very much devoted to her husband if he is not fallen. Mm-hmm. Right, so that's the thing. That's the thing, and she's devoted there because it keeps the mind peace, so it makes everything runs very nicely, and then one can be absorbed in Krishna. 215, 266, 269. That night, Amoga, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, fled, and in the morning, he immediately fell sick with cholera. When the Bhattacharya heard that Amoga was dying of cholera, he thought, it is the favor of Providence that he is doing what I want to do. Leprosy? No, leprosy won't. That basically doesn't kill you. Like that, you know.
For sure, you just lose a few fingers and a few toes. And
yeah, like that. But cholera, it can do you very quickly, because you die from dehydration. It's just, you know, there's no water left in your body. That's what cholera does.
And nobody comes because it's contagious.
Yeah, and it's very contagious. So everybody stays away. So yeah, like that.
Still existing, isn't it?
Sorry.
Still.
Color around? You don't hear of it much. But even nowadays, if you go into hospital, they put you on the drip, so they keep the water in the body, and then they give medicines to control the others. But otherwise, before that, then you just lose all the. You can't take. If you take anything, it comes out, so you can't. Yeah, it's a tough one.
Is it a virus?
I have no idea. It's some variety of bug. Well, that's the disease. Oh. Oh, okay. Have a vaccine.
Soon.
Coming soon.
74%.
Yeah.
When one offends the Supreme Personality of Godhead, karma immediately takes effect. After seeing this, he recited two verses from the revealed scriptures. What we have had to arrange with great endeavor by collecting elephants, horses, chariots, and infantry soldiers has already been accomplished by the Gandharvas. Srila Prabhupada. This is a quotation from the Mahabharata, Vanaparva, 2.4.1.15. Bhima Sen made this statement. Of course he would make this statement. Bhima Sen made this statement when all the Pandavas were living in exile in the forest. At that time, there was a fight between the Kauravas and the Gandharvas. The Kaurava soldiers were under the command of Karna, but the commander-in-chief of the Gandharvas was able to arrest all the Kauravas by virtue of superior military strength. At that time, Duryodhana's ministers and commanders requested Maharaj Yudhishthir to help. After being thus petitioned, Bhima Sen spoke the verse given above, remembering Duryodhana's former nefarious and atrocious activities against them. Indeed, Bhima Sen felt it very fitting that Duryodhana and his company were arrested. This could have been accomplished by the Pandavas only with great endeavor. Right? Yeah, so that they came there, the Pandavas were there, they weren't so far away, I think, at that time or something. So then Duryodhana thought it would be a very nice thing to go there decked out with all as maximum opulences as you can and go out there and have a picnic just close by enough where they can see them. And the Gandharvas, who also happened to be in the area, you know, because there's a lake there, it's a very famous lake, and they spend their time there. You know, their time is, we take our noon bath, and then you take lunch and don't use the swimming until the evening. Then again, you can use the water, but in that place in between, that's the Gandharvas time. So that's also maybe, how you say, it's been lost in antiquity, but that's why it says you're not supposed to go swimming after you eat, because that's the Gandharvas time. Like that.
For 2-3 hours.
Yes, like that, for 3 hours. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And not in the evening?
The evening, no. No, they may, again, at night after it gets dark, you're also not supposed to use the water. Then it's their time again.
Yeah.
Like that. And so then they were down there, and when they saw Duryodhana and them come, and then they knew this is what they're coming for, they think this is nonsense. So then they attacked us. So Karna was the commander-in-chief. And so easily, every one of them, everybody, like that. And so all of them together, fighting with the Gandharvas, they couldn't defeat him. And then, you know, how you say, Bhima thought, oh, great, they've taken care of the problem. Now we can go back to, you know, back to the palace. But then Yudhishthir said, no, they're family. You know, they can't come and insult our family. And so then, you know, okay. So Arjuna alone defeated them. So then that was also a point that Duryodhana just gave up. He just said, you know, we thought here were the powerful ones, and that one guy alone defeats the Gandharvas that they, as a huge group company, couldn't defeat. And so he decided to give up at that time. But don't worry. While he was laying down in his lamentation and meditation, the demons came to him and said, don't worry, we'll empower you and everybody to fight, you know, yes, like that. So then he became inspired. But here, Bhima's made the point. What we've done with great endeavor, the Gandharvas just did so easily. So he's pointing out is what we would like to do, you know, he's saying here, then Providence took care of, you know, so comfortably.
But now here we see that Sarvabhauma Kesaya really is not lamenting, he's seeing the principle.
Yeah, no, he's seeing that, because he's blaspheming the Lord. See, it's not like it, somehow or another it wasn't arranged. He specifically tried to keep him away. He's made this single place that he can't get in except through the house. You know, you can't get into that room except through the kitchen. He's been keeping him away in that, but while he's serving prasad, he forcefully comes in and forcefully comes into the room just so he can see, just so he can criticize. And so such a person, what's the point of that person's existence? They make so much endeavor just to blaspheme the Lord. The Lord's personally there. You could come in, offer obeisances, you know, surrender, do something. But he just comes in and makes these things.
He didn't have a website.
Yeah, otherwise it'd be. Yeah, he would have taken pictures, put it up, you know, like that. It would have been. Yeah. Yeah. You see, Kali has advanced like that. You know, wasn't his. I mean, yeah. He's
Too early.
Yes, too early.
You were setting the ground for Ramachandra Puja.
Yes. Yeah. So, yes. So the point is such a person, it's not like he happened to be there in the house and he happened to walk in and, oh, can I help? And, wow, this is a lot of food. You know, like that. No, he specifically was trying to get in specifically just to see, just so he could criticize. Right? Because he knows they're cooking so much and all this and why all this. You know, it's just that the critical person cannot be satisfied. Therefore, no one tries to satisfy, no intelligent person tries to satisfy them.
So the psychology here actually is that Sarvabhautacharya and his wife, they knew the nature of the son of God.
Yes.
And they knew that he was strong. And he must have criticized many things before.
Yes.
And therefore he was guarding the door because he said, he's God.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's going to do it again.
Yes. Yes, but somehow or another, you know, they figured he might at least have taken the hint.
Right.
I'm sure next time he'll have the doors locked, so he can't even get in, right? You know, that would be the next step. Sarva Bhauma Bhattacharya continued, quoting, "When a person mistreats great souls, his lifespan, opulence, reputation, religion, possessions, and good fortune are all destroyed." Srila Prabhupada, this statement, Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, was made by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. This quotation concerns the attempted killing of Krishna's sister, Yogamaya, who appeared before Krishna's birth as the daughter of Mother Jashoda. This daughter, Yogamaya, and Krishna were born simultaneously, and Vasudeva replaced Yogamaya with Krishna and took Yogamaya away. When she was brought to Mathura and Kamsa attempted to kill her, Yogamaya slipped out of his hands. She could not be killed. She then implored Kamsa about the birth of his enemy, Krishna, and being thus baffled, Kamsa consulted his associates, who were all demons. When when this big conspiracy was taking place, this verse was spoken by Sukadeva Goswami. He points out that a demon can lose everything because of his nefarious activities. Right? So you see, all these demons, then they tried to take care of Krishna. The lifespan, opulence, reputation, everything was all destroyed. So they were very powerful. Even demigods were afraid of them. But as soon as they went to Vrindavan, that was it. Otherwise, if they hadn't bothered Krishna, they would have been around for quite a long time. Because those powers come from performing pious activities. But you're doing the pious activities for gross material benefits. Right? And so the piety is there. It will remain. But if you use it against the Lord and the great devotees and great personalities, then you'll reduce. But if they just want to stay in their place and enjoy themselves materially, then their life will go quite comfortably. The word Mahad Ati Krama, meaning envy of Lord Krishna and his devotees, is significant in this verse. The word Mahat indicates a great personality, a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. Being always engaged in the Lord's service, the devotees themselves are as great as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Being envious of the Lord and his devotees is not at all auspicious for a demon. By such envy, a demon loses everything considered beneficial. Verses 271 to 302. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu shows mercy to Amogha. 215, 271 to 277. At this time, Gopinathacharya went to see Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Lord asked him about the events taking place in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. Gopinathacharya informed the Lord that both the husband and wife were fasting, but that the son-in-law, Amogha, was dying of cholera. As soon as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard that Amogha was going to die, he immediately ran to him in great haste. Placing his hand on Amogha's chest, he spoke as follows, "The heart of a Brahmin is by nature very clean. Therefore, it is a proper place for Krishna to sit. Why have you allowed the chandala of jealousy to sit here also? In this way you have contaminated a most purified place, your heart. However, due to the association of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, all your contamination is now vanquished. When a person's heart is cleansed of all contamination, he is able to chant the Mahamantra, Hare Krishna. Therefore, Amogha, get up and chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. If you do so, Krishna will unfailingly bestow mercy upon you." Srila Prabhupada, The absolute truth is realized in three phases: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. All of these are one and the same truth, but Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan constitute three different features. Whoever understands Brahman is called a Brahmana, and when a Brahmana engages in the Lord's devotional service, he is called a Vaishnava. Unless one comes to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his realization of impersonal Brahman is imperfect. Right? Because even you're absorbed in Brahman, your understanding will be imperfect unless you become a devotee. Only devotees properly understand Brahman. A Brahmana can chant the Hare Krishna mantra on the platform of Nama Bas, but not on the platform of pure vibration. When a Brahmana engages in the Lord's service, fully understanding his eternal relationship, his devotional service is called Abhiteya. When one attains that stage, he is called a Bhagavata or a Vaishnava. This indicates that he is freed from contamination and material attachment. So one is a Brahmana and the other is a Bhagavata. Right? Because a Brahmana understands Brahman, but a Bhagavata worships a Bhagavan. Lord Krishna confirms this in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Yesham tvanta gatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam drita vrataha. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated are freed from the duality of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. Brahmana may be a very learned scholar, but this does not mean he is freed from material contamination, right? Because he has the mode of goodness. That's still a material contamination. A Brahman's contamination, however, is in the mode of goodness. In the material world, the three modes are goodness, passion, and ignorance. And all of these are simply different gradations of contamination. Unless a Brahmana transcends such contamination and approaches the platform of unalloyed devotional service, he cannot be accepted as a Vaishnava. An impersonalist may be aware of the impersonal Brahman feature of the Absolute Truth, but his activities are on the impersonal platform. Sometimes he imagines a form of the Lord, Saguna Upasana, but such an attempt is never successful in helping one attain complete realization. Right? So even though he's worshipping the Lord, the Saguna Upasana, with qualities, and he's worshipping Vishnu, that doesn't make him actually a Vaishnava. They may call themselves Vaishnavas, but technically they're not. Because unless they think they'll understand the form of the Lord is eternal, and that way they're worshipping the Lord, then they can't be Vaishnavas. The impersonalist may consider himself a Brahmana and may be situated in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless he is conditioned by one of the modes of material nature. This means that he is not yet liberated, for liberation cannot be attained unless one is completely free from the modes. In any case, the Mayavad philosophy keeps one conditioned. One becomes a Vaishnava through proper initiation, he automatically becomes a Brahmana. There's no doubt about it, right? Because the Brahmana who then knows, means Brahmana means one who knows Brahman. Vaishnava means one who knows Bhagavan. So if one's properly initiated as a Vaishnava, the Brahman part comes with it, because with Krishna there's Brahman. So with surrender to Krishna comes the knowledge of Brahman. So therefore he's a Brahmana.
Yes. What's the position of Brahmavadi?
Brahmavadi. They're also, they don't know completely. But how you say? But they accept the form of the Lord as eternal, because it's all Brahman, so they're not offensive. But still they don't have complete knowledge. But then when they get the association, then they take up, like we see with Sukadeva Goswami, like that. Because it was Krishna himself who convinced him that he would remain in that transcendental position, like that. So he doesn't have a problem with Bhagavan, but it's just not that there's this sense of devotion towards the Lord, like that. So they're in a better position. That's why you see the talks about these great rishis and things like that. They're on this kind of platform. So when the Lord comes, they worship and they're very happy, because they're directly dealing with Brahman. But at the same time, it's then by association, then they can become Vaishnavas. So,
Here, Amoga, the son of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, was a Brahmana.
He's the husband of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter.
Yes. But he was...
He's a Brahmin, yes. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya in his position, then his daughter, then she'll naturally marry a qualified Brahmin, because he's very qualified. So then he would be technically, as far as the family lines and his qualification on that ritualistic platform, would be very qualified. And so therefore they're married. But then who knows when they were married? Because we see Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was not a devotee. He became. So then,
whatever. Then he joined. Huh? And then the problem started.
Yes. But even if not, then he's looked at. But the point is he can come up to the platform. But he at this up to this point he hasn't been. Lord Krishna confirms in the Bhagavad Gita 7:28. Yesham, no? Oh, okay. Brahmana may be a very learned scholar, but this does not mean that he is free from material contamination. Brahman's contamination, however... Oh, no, we read that also. Oh, here, Saguna Upasana. Okay, the impersonals may consider himself a Brahmana, and may be situated in the mode of goodness, but nonetheless he is conditioned by one of the modes of material nature. This means that he is not yet liberated. For liberation cannot be attained unless one is completely free from the modes. In any case, the Mayavad philosophy keeps one conditioned. If one becomes a Vaishnava through proper initiation, he automatically becomes a Brahmin. So the Mayavad philosophy will stay conditioned. Mayavadis will never get out like that. Brahmanandis might. Temporarily, but Mayavadis, there's no question like that. There's no doubt about it that he becomes a Brahmana, the Vaishnava. The Garuda Purana confirms this. Brahmananam sahasrebhya satra yaji vishishyate. Satra yaji sahasrebhya sarva vedanta paraga. Sarva vedanta vid. Kotya Vishnu Bhakto Vishishyate. Out of many thousands of Brahmanas, one may become qualified to perform yajna. Out of many thousands of such qualified Brahmanas, one may be fully aware of the Vedanta philosophy. Out of many millions of learned Vedanta scholars, there may be one Vishnu Bhakta or devotee of Lord Vishnu. It is he who is most exalted. Yeah. Unless one is a fully qualified Brahmana, he cannot advance in the spiritual science. A real Brahmana is never envious of Vaishnavas. If he is, he is considered an imperfect neophyte. Impersonalist Brahmanas are always opposed to Vaishnava principles. They are envious of Vaishnavas because they do not know the goal of life. Nate vidhu svarta gatim hi vishnum, Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.31. However, when a Brahmana becomes a Vaishnava, there is no duality. If a Brahmana does not become a Vaishnava, he certainly falls down from the Brahmana platform. This is confirmed by Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.3. Nabhajant yavajananti sthanad brashta patant yada. We can actually see that in the age of Kali, many so-called Brahmanas are envious of Vaishnavas. The Kali-contaminated Brahmanas consider deity worship to be imaginative. Archaye Vishnu Shiladir Gurushu Nara Matir Vaishnave Jati Budhihi. Such a contaminated Brahmana may superficially imagine a form of the Lord, but actually considers the deity in the temple to be made of stone or wood. Similarly, such a contaminated Brahmana considers the Guru to be an ordinary human being. And he objects when a Vaishnava is created by the Krishna consciousness movement. Mm-hmm. Many so-called Brahmanas attempt to fight us, saying, how can you create a Brahmana out of a European or American? A Brahmana can only be born only in a Brahmana family. They do not consider that is that it is never stated in any revealed scripture. No revealed scripture says the only place you can get a Brahmin is from a Brahmin family. It doesn't say that. Right? It means if the family is properly practicing and you see the child's not doing anything that gives indication otherwise, then he's accepted as a Brahmana, but that's by the association. Like that. But if he's not, then he'll be a Brahmapandu. Lord Krishna specifically states in the Bhagavad Gita 4:13, Chatur Vanyam Maya Shrishtam Guna Karma Vibhaga Saha. According to the three modes of material nature and the work associated with them, the four divisions of human society are created by me. Thus, a Brahman is not a result of the caste system. He becomes a Brahmana only by qualification. Similarly, a Vaishnava does not belong to a particular caste. Rather, his designation is determined by his rendering of devotional service. Right? Because the Varna system is simply how you maintain yourself, how you're situated. That's what it's for. It's for the maintenance, bodily and social maintenance. That's what it's for. So, it's not created by the caste system. It's you qualify for it. Right? And where you qualify, that's where you fit in. Generally speaking, you'll see those from a Brahmin family would be Brahminical. But it's not necessarily so. Wherever you fit, and someone not born in that may be Brahminical. So wherever they fit, that's what's accepted. So when you fix it by birth, then that's improperly applied. Right? And then for the Vaishnavas, they don't have an identification with these. They may be performing the duties of these, but they don't identify with them. That's the difference. So the point that they don't identify doesn't mean they don't do the work. Because sometimes they say, we don't identify, we don't do the work. We do the work, we identify. No, it's two different things. We do the work, we don't identify.
It's interesting to see how much effort and emphasis Prabhupada put in these lengthy purpose.
Yes.
And there is an issue to deal with.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And he deals with these, but you have to see it from, you have to start from Krishna, how it works there, and then apply it. And then it works very well. So it's not that he hasn't dealt with these things, it's just this is not being consulted. And you have to study, then it makes more sense. Otherwise, if you just take the words and all that and use it for your political advantage, then it won't necessarily get you much results. Chapter 15, 278, 296. After hearing Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and being touched by him, Amoga, who was on his deathbed, immediately stood up and began to chant the holy name of Krishna. Thus he became mad with ecstatic love and began to dance emotionally. While Amoga danced in ecstatic love, he manifested all the ecstatic symptoms: trembling, tears, jubilation, trance, perspiration, and a faltering voice. Seeing these waves of ecstatic emotion, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to laugh. Amoga then fell before the Lord's lotus feet and submissively said, O merciful Lord, please excuse my offense. Not only did Amoga beg the Lord's pardon, but he also began slapping his own cheeks, saying, By this mouth I have blasphemed you. Indeed, Amoga continued slapping his face over and over till his cheeks were swollen. Finally, Gopinath Acharya stopped him by catching hold of his hands. After this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pacified Amoga by touching his body and saying, You are the object of my affection, because you are the son-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Right? So the devotee is dear, so anyone connected with him is dear. Like that. Everyone in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house is very dear to me, including his maids and servants and even his dog. And what to speak of his relatives? Amoga always chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and do not commit any further offenses. After giving Amoga this instruction, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to Sarvabhauma's house. Upon seeing the Lord, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya immediately caught hold of his lotus feet. The Lord embraced him and then sat down. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pacified Sarvabhauma, saying, "After all, Amoga, your son-in-law, is a child, so what is his fault? Why are you fasting and why are you angry? Just get up and take your bath and go see the face of Lord Jagannath. Then return here to eat your lunch. In this way, I shall be happy. I shall stay here until you return to take Lord Jagannath's remnants for your lunch." Catching hold of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet, the Bhattacharya said, "Why did you bring Amoga back to life? It would have been better had he died." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Amoga is a child and your son. The father does not take the faults of his son seriously, especially when he is maintaining him. Now that he has become a Vaishnava, he is offenseless. You can bestow your mercy upon him without hesitation." Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, "Please go, my lord, to see Lord Jagannath. After taking my bath, I shall go there and then return." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then told Gopinath, "Stay here and inform me when Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya has taken his prasad," because he may say all these things and then do as he likes. After saying this, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to see Lord Jagannath. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya completed his bath, went to see Lord Jagannath, and then returned to his house to accept food. Thereafter, Amoga became an unalloyed devotee of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He danced in ecstasy and peacefully chanted the holy name of Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, as stated in Shaka Nirnayamrita, "Amoga Panditam Vande Sri Gaurainatma Satkritam Prema Gadgara Sandrangam Pulaka Kula Vigraham. I offer my obeisances unto Amoga Pandit, who was accepted by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As a result of his acceptance, he was always merged in ecstatic love, and he manifested ecstatic symptoms such as choking of the voice and standing of the hairs on his body." In this way, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his various pastimes. Whoever sees them or hears them recounted becomes fully astonished. Thus Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enjoyed eating at Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house. Within that one pastime, many wonderful pastimes were manifested. These are the peculiar characteristics of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Right? By one pastime, so many pastimes come up. So many things were accomplished. Thus the Lord ate in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, and in this way Sarvabhauma's love for the Lord has become very well known. Thus I have related the ecstatic love of Sarvabhauma's wife, who is known as the mother of Shati. I have also related Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great mercy, which he manifested by excusing Amoga's offense. He did so due to Amoga's relationship with a devotee. Srila Prabhupada, Amoga was an offender because he blasphemed the Lord. As a result, he was about to die of cholera. Amoga did not receive an opportunity to be freed from all offenses after being attacked by the disease. But Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and his wife were very dear to the Lord. Because of their relationship, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu excused Amoga. Instead of being punished by the Lord, he was saved by the Lord's mercy. All this was due to the unflinching love of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Externally, Amoga was Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's son-in-law, and he was being maintained by Sarvabhauma. Consequently, if Amoga were not excused, his punishment would have directly affected Sarvabhauma. Amoga's death would have indirectly brought about the death of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Right, because then his daughter would have no husband, this, that, and then they would be thinking, you know, so offensive, and he's in our family, and like that. So he was, Lord Chaitanya saying, no. 215-301-2-302. Whoever hears these pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with faith and love will attain the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet very soon. Praying at the lotus feet of Sri Rupa and Sri Raghunath, always desiring their mercy, I, Krishna Das, narrate Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, following in their footsteps.
And someone with a child worked in mining for 30 days.
Yes. But he only got five.
One was a drop.
Yes, and so now everything else will be okay. Yeah, otherwise then he would have been fasting, then he would have been a big whole trip. I say, whole, what do you call it, Megillah?
Yes. That's right. Yes. side point. Why did Amoga live with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? Should be vice versa. She should have gone to his place.
That's that. You have to. It means you see whatever the arrangements were. He was taking care. It doesn't sound like he's necessarily in his house.
No, but it said
that he maintained him.
Because he's taking care, he's dealing with the temple. Maybe he's also then arranged to work something with the temple, being, you know, being a Brahmin and all that. And so then it's all arranged. Like that. Conclusion. Maybe not. We won't get very far. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.